D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home with a $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and David Janes here with you. The Predators are back in action in a couple of hours against the Montreal Canadiens. So let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in our friend, Sportsnet NHL insider extraordinaire, Elliot Freeman, who is presented by Old National Bank. Get old. Elliot, Brady Martin has been scratched in each of the past two games. He is not expected to play tonight in Montreal. We talked to Barry Trotz on Tuesday. The Predators are taking their time deciding what to do with Martin. But when do you think they need to decide what to do with Martin?
Well, it says to me that it's not going to be too long, I don't think. You don't have to, there's two things. Number one, there's the 10th game, which burns the first year of your rookie contract. For those of you who are not familiar, rookie contracts are 3 years. And there are some people who look at it and say, oh, you don't want to burn that first year. So if you send him down after 9 games played, then the contract slides for three. So you still have the 3 years. Not every team cares about that. Some teams do, some teams don't. But the thing that they do care about is if a player is on the roster for 41 games, and that doesn't matter if he plays or not, that's just teams 41 games, then you burn a year towards unrestricted free agency and salary arbitration. And generally, teams won't do that unless a guy is actually playing. So what it says to me is I'm not worried about the 10-game thing necessarily for Brady Martin, but what I do think is that they can't have him up there if he's not going to play. So this says to me it's coming sooner rather than later, and because it's not a good idea to have him sit. Have him playing somewhere if it's not in the NHL.
I do want to ask you about a major story in the NHL today. The Golden Knights announced today that they have brought in goaltender Carter Hart, who was among the 5 Canadian hockey players found not guilty of sexual assault this summer. How do you expect the Golden Knights to handle this situation, and what has been the reaction around the league to this signing?
Well, obviously, people are very passionate one way or the other. Either they feel, and Carter Hart was acquitted in a sexual assault case, along with 4 other players this summer, and there are some people who feel that there were some things that people know who follow the trial know that weren't admitted as facts, and that has them upset that anybody would give him a chance. And there's other people who are like, you know what, he went through the court system, he was acquitted, and he deserves a chance to go again. And I don't think you're going to, if Adam, whatever side everyone is on this, I don't think you're changing anyone's mind. People are very passionate about the position that they have. What I say about the whole situation is this. I believe that until the verdict itself, it was unlikely that any of these players were going to be allowed to play in the NHL this year. I think that people were expecting the NHL to step up and say, regardless of what happened in a court of law, we want to punish these players for the disrepute they brought to the game. The commissioner has very wide latitude on that because it did definitely cause a lot of negativity towards hockey. However, I think the strength of the verdict and the comments by the judge, where the judge, she basically cast a lot of doubt on the veracity of the story, I think that really changed the calculus, Adam. That was when the league set on this punishment, negotiated with the Players Association that nobody could sign until yesterday and that none of them will be able to play in the NHL until December the 1st. I just think the force of the judge's comments really changed the way a lot of people saw this case unfolding in the NHL. And I think the other thing, too, is you'll remember that, and the cases are not the same. They are not the same. But when the Boston Bruins signed Mitchell Miller, a number of the Bruins players, including Patrice Bergeron and Brad Marchand, came out very strongly against it. And if you're reading the quotes today from the Vegas Golden Knights, the quotes are not the same. And I think if you're a team like Vegas or anybody else who might sign one of these players, you have to be prepared for some backlash. Obviously, their players knew about it. You know, I hope you take the temperature of your sponsors and maybe some of your staff to see how they feel. But, you know, Adam, you know, I think everybody understands that there are people who feel very strongly that these players, that they don't want to see these players on their team. And everybody has to understand that and recognize that and know that people aren't going to be changing their minds.
Elliot Friedman is with us, 32 Thoughts. Elliot, up here in Montreal, it's really a magical place to watch a game, no matter what the situation is with the Canadiens. That's what I've always appreciated about their fans. Even when they haven't had a great team, it's a great venue. But there seems to be an excitement here that there hasn't been in a while. I was looking at some of the video from their home opener. It really seems like they're buzzing about this young team.
I think that you're right about that. First of all, Willie, I'm really sorry I missed you the other day. I was in New York for the Board of Governors, and I hate missing teams when they only come in once a year, like the Predators do, with because they're in the Western Conference. So I was disappointed to miss you and that team. It is rocking in there. They scored a late goal on Monday night in the home opener. Demidov, their young star. And, you know, I was in New York that night, and you could hear, it's like you could hear the Montreal crowd from the middle of Manhattan. You know, they got Lane Hutson signed, one of their great young defensemen, to a big contract. Like, that is a team that's locking up a lot of their young core players, and their fans are thrilled about the way they look. They made the playoffs last year for the first time since 2021. They've got a really good young core. They've got a lot of talent there, and you can feel the energy in the city. Now, I still think that they're a little bit from where they're going to be. They still got growth to have, but there's no question that you guys are going in there tonight to a riled up building with a confident, skilled, talented young team. And if you are not prepared to defend against them, they can embarrass you. This kid Demidov, who was the fifth overall pick 2 years ago, showed up from Russia last year with, I think, two games to go in the regular season, and he is a stud. And, you know, you're getting a treat in terms of getting a chance to see him tonight. He's a real talent, and they've got a bunch of really good young players.
Elliot, you remember last year, it was not until December, but the last time the Predators came through Toronto, Montreal, the team was a mess, right? There was a lot of stories of lack of cohesiveness and why isn't this working with Brady Shea and Steven Stamkos, and especially Jonathan Marchessault. And Marchessault seems to be in a much, much better place mentally and on board with everything. How much are you noticing from afar? I know you didn't get a chance to talk to the guys coming through here, but it does seem like that's maybe one of the more intriguing things about the Predators in these opening chapters.
Well, I'll say this. I think the one thing I was looking for right away was Saros. And he looks very different this year. Like, I love that shot of him in Ottawa when the Ottawa guys were all skating through the crease and he was, like, standing at the bench and glaring at them. I thought that was awesome. Like, to me, that's a goalie who's dialed in. He's sitting there saying, I don't like the fact you guys are going through my crease. You know, they had a bit of a stinker the other day in Toronto. That can happen. But the bottom line is it looks better. Like, Willie, you're there every day. Adam and Derek, you guys are around a lot. Like, it just looks better to me, Willie. Does it not seem that way?
It does. I think specifically with Saros, too, I think that there has been, remember last year, I think you were one leading the way of talking about they were trying to make some adjustments in their system midstream when they were already in a big hole. But now it does seem like they're playing differently. to try to set Soros up to be able to succeed, and it's working. With the way they're boxing out, the way they're trying to create lanes for him to see the puck, some of the subtle things that, you know, our analysts have been able to look for and find out. So far, so good. And you know, there's only time will tell how far that's going to take them. But I do think there is a buy-in there that last year the question seemed to be always, well, is this the way we should be playing with these guys? And that's not the way we played over here. There was a lot of uncertainty.
Well, I think too, you won early, right? Like, you won a couple games early, and that always changes things for the better. Like, if you're not sure, like, last year, they got humbled, they got humiliated. So it's always easier to buy in when you're coming back a year after a year where you're licking your wounds like the Predators were last season. But also, you've got the benefit now, you've won games. You can look early at this and say, hey, like, this is good for us. We have a good feeling about ourselves. And, you know, I think the other thing, too, is there's some new blood there. Like, last year was about the free agents. Like, even though Martin is, I don't know how long he's going to be up there. I don't get the sense it's going to be incredibly long. But Kemmel made the team, and he had that monster hit at the end of your preseason against Carolina. And I know he hasn't played all the time, but I think there's, last year was about the veterans. This year is a little bit more about the youth, although we don't know how long that's going to last. But the bottom line to me is that you won games right away, and Soros just looks better. Now, I was at the Board of Governors meeting yesterday, and I saw Barry Trotz there with he was one of the few GMs. A lot of GMs don't go to that. Barry was there, and sorry, I always get mixed up. Which Haslam is it, Jimmy or Bill? I always get them mixed up. Bill. Bill Haslam was with him, and he's on this trip, right? So
yes.
I with the team. So I think that's really interesting. Like, when the owner's going with your team at the beginning of the year, I always think that gives a heightened sense of alertness to the players and the staff. The owner's here. The owner's getting an idea of what this all looks like. So I'm sure that there's a little bit more of that there, Willie, that sometimes I think when that person is there, there's also a little bit more urgency to the way you start. But so far, so good. To me, the key is Soros, and he just looks like that shot, like that thing with him in Ottawa, like, you never see that. And I was looking at that, and I was texting some other guys, and we were like, that's a guy who's dialed in. Like, he doesn't like all these guys skating through his crease, and he's dialed in.
Elliot, you mentioned the Board of Governors meetings. One theme that has come out of that, there's a lot of discussion about what the NHL wants to do globally over the next stretch here. And, of course, Nashville is going to Sweden in a few weeks to play in the global series. And then there's the Olympics. So tell me the theme. What more do they want to do that they haven't been doing there?
Well, I think one of the things they're talking about, Willie, is, like, do we still continue to go to places like Sweden where hockey is stronger, or do we have to start going to some other places? Like, they went to UK, they played in London, but I think the last time they were there was 18 years ago. Like, I know Luke Robitaille, who's the president of the Kings, he's told us before in our podcast that we've got to go back there. I think there's also talk about, are there other places? Like, they did a big study. They hired a firm or a consultant. They talked a lot about Germany. There are some great German players in the league, Leon Draisaitl in Edmonton, Tim Stützle in Ottawa. And Germany's like a big, strong market. And then there's always talk about places like China, regular season games in Mexico City. Now the teams next year, they're going from 82 games to 84. So should more teams be going to more places? And should you be taking more teams there? Like, one thing that someone told me today was, apparently it was brought up there that maybe you should be sending like four teams to one place and doing, like, they each play three games and you do a mini tournament. At the end, the team with the best record wins some kind of trophy or something like that. And I think Like, there are some people who really want to push it, like really want to push it more and more, and also going to places where you wouldn't necessarily think about. So I don't know where all of this is going to go. I think they have to really decide how far they want to push it quick. But there's no question, Willie, that there's some people there who want it to be aggressive and sooner rather than later.
Elliot, before we let you go, help me understand something. We have seen a lot of young players sign long-term deals recently. You mentioned Lane Hutson. The Predators will see Lane Hutson tonight. Jackson Lacombe in Anaheim, Luke Hughes in New Jersey, among others. And I know these situations are not all the same, but the cap is skyrocketing. So why aren't these young players betting on themselves more as opposed to signing away most of their prime years?
It's a great question, Adam, and it's really a philosophical thing. I talk to players about this, and if you really look at it, like Austin Matthews has done it. By the time his contract is up in Toronto, assuming he stays all the way through in 2028, he'll have played 12 years in Toronto, but he'll have signed three contracts, 3, 5, and 4 years. We just saw Connor McDavid sign for two. And, you know, when I ask young players or even agents, why don't more people do that? Honestly, Adam, the answer is injury. Like, this is a sport that's being played faster than ever in a very confined area. And you can get hurt pretty easily. And that's why I think injury is the number one answer. The other thing too, Adam, is that, you know, for a guy like Lane Hutson, he just signed for $90 million, okay? Like, days before he signed it, it looked like that deal was going to fall apart. I just think it's really hard when you're 20, 21, 22 years old and somebody waves $90 million in front of you to say no. Maybe you're a better man than me, Adam, but if I was 22 and someone waved $90 million in front of me, I don't think I'd be looking for too many other options.
I don't think I could turn that down either. Point well taken. Point well taken. Sportsnet NHL.
Yeah, I've always thought about it the other way, though. That I think sometimes you have to look at it from the team side. They're making a huge commitment before they've won with that player, before they're sure that player is going to be a star. They might have a pretty good notion, but I think it probably works that way too, doesn't it?
It does, but Willie, I think history has proven in sports that if you believe you have a cornerstone player, you sign them for as long as you can because the price never goes down.
That's fair.
I guess that has worked more. I guess it's worked that way more often than not when teams have done this, right? I can't think of too many where it's been a complete bust 6 years later going, why in the world did we sign that guy for 8 years?
In most cases, like Roman Josi, for example, is when his contract is up, do you think anyone's going to be looking at him and saying, boy, we didn't get our money's worth there?
No.
So I think when you have young guys in the prime of their lives and their career, yeah, some of them don't work. But if you really think it's a cornerstone player, I would say it works much more often than not.
Sportsnet NHL insider Elliot Friedman has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. He joins us every Thursday during hockey season and is presented by Old National Bank. Get old. Elliot, thank you as always for your time. We'll chat next week.
All right. Take care, guys. Have a good week.
You as well. Elliot Friedman on the program, 615-737-1025. We will bid adieu to Willie Donick as he prepares to take on, he's not taking on the Montreal Canadiens. He'll have the call as the Predators take on the Montreal Canadiens.
Though I'm ready to take him on.
Yeah, ready. He's ready to go.
I mean, after you called me Alex yesterday, I certainly wouldn't mind the Canadiens player checking you into the boards lightly, just enough for you to feel it. I don't want you to get hurt. Yes. But Willie is
sending
not
a message.
Yes, Willie is not taking on the Montreal Canadiens, but he will be calling the Predators as they take on the Montreal Canadiens. That's on FanDuel Sports Network, and of course, right here on 102.5 The Game. Puck drop at 6, pregame at 5. Coming up next, there was a report about the Titans on ESPN that I don't necessarily agree with. We will discuss that coming up next. 615-737-1025. D-Mace Ving and Adonic is presented to you by Bax Homeworks, which transforms kitchens, bathrooms, and living spaces into places you can't wait to come home to. Get a free estimate right now at BAXHomeworks.com.
Is it kind of a wake-up call for the players? Like, how do you guys approach it, I guess?
Whenever you're 1-5, it should be a wake-up call to begin with. They moved on from the coach, so now we continue to lose, they're going to start moving on from the players. So it's our job to make sure we keep our job and we find a way to win.
That was Amani Hooker yesterday talking about the state of the Tennessee Titans, the 1-5 Tennessee Titans taking on Mike Vrabel's 4-2 Patriots on Sunday. By the way, before I forget, Saturday's college football game of the week is Oklahoma versus South Carolina at 11:45 on 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks Restaurants and Circus Sportsbook Kentucky. Coverage is also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Derek Mason and Adam Vingan here with you. So every week, Jeremy Fowler and Dan Graziano over at ESPN, they have this huge notebook of things they're hearing around the NFL. So, of course, with the Titans firing Brian Callahan, the Titans took up a lot of real estate in this notebook. But there was something that Jeremy Fowler wrote about the Titans that I don't like hearing. Here is what he wrote. Quote, "The Titans were already poised to be active at the trade deadline, and the Callahan firing only expedites that process. They know they need draft capital to rebuild the roster. Edge rusher Arden Key, cornerback Roger McCreary, and tight end Chigga Conquo are among players on my radar. There could be more, but those three are 2026 free agents and do not appear in the long-term vision of the franchise." Now, here's the part I don't like, Derek. "And the plan right now is to keep Jeffrey Simmons. He's unquestionably the Titans' best player and turns 28 in July. But Tennessee needs to find a way to make the job more attractive from a roster standpoint. Ward and Simmons are not enough. The team currently has 7 picks in the 2026 draft and would like to add more." So that's the part that I don't necessarily agree with, Derek. Mm-hmm. The plan right now, according to Jeremy Fowler of ESPN, is to keep Jeffrey Simmons. I am firmly in the camp of you need to trade Jeffrey Simmons. I know that Jeffrey Simmons has been outstanding this season. He is making an impact in every game. He is getting to the quarterback. He is getting to the quarterback quickly. Remember, he lost a lot of weight in the offseason, and it shows. Mm-hmm. He looks a lot faster getting to the quarterback. But if the Titans want to make the roster more attractive to a potential coach, this is where I want your player perspective. Because part of me thinks it's going to be a hard sell, right? If you're a potential head coach and you're like, well, who's on that roster? Cam Ward and that's it? Like, part of me is like, Jeffrey Simmons may need to be on the roster as a selling point for a potential head coach. But at the same time, if they want to get better, as I've said, it starts, I think, with trading Jeffrey Simmons. So where do you fall on this? What do you make of that report?
Let's start with the three guys prior.
Key, McCreary, and Okonkwo.
Jeffrey. Those guys, we talked about this at the beginning of the year, because I think early on we understood that, listen, this team isn't good. What will they be like in the middle of the season? And we did this early before the season started, or I think right when the season started. What guys be around, all this other stuff that we were talking about with this team. And, you know, obviously Jeffrey Simmons was on top of the mind when trading because he would garner the most in return. But I also said, I don't think McQuarrie's going to be on this team next year, so why not trade him? I mentioned Chigga Conquo because they got Gunnar Helm. And those seem to be the two guys that – and now you throw in Calvin Ridley, I think.
Well, he's hurt.
Yeah, he's hurt. But it's not an injury where he should be back before the trade deadline even get going.
I mean, I know that it's not the same situation, mm-hmm. but didn't Julio Jones have a hamstring injury?
Yeah, but I'm not sure that, and I could be wrong on this, I'm not sure that Calvin Ridley has, like an extensive history because.
By the way, he did not practice again today with that hamstring
injury.
He may
not be. Yeah, it's hard. Now, if he doesn't practice tomorrow, I can't see him playing in this game. So do you hold him out and try to get him as healthy as possible? And then you look to trade him because he started to play a little bit better? Or do you wait for him to get healthy? Hopefully it's before the trade deadline. Let him play a game, see if he's ready to go, and then make your determination based upon that. But I think those guys that he named first, I think they really are in play. And you may be able to throw in a couple other guys. But now when you're talking about Jeffrey Simmons, here's the problem that you have as a, you know, a Tennessee Titan or a fan or whatnot. If you are not getting a first-round pick and something else, it's not worth it. Because if you're not getting a guy that has the potential to be, or you're drafting him high enough that more likely he will be the next Jeffrey Simmons or be a version of Jeffrey Simmons than not, if I'm not getting that high of a pick, I'm not making the trade because I still got another year on the contract for one, even though we're going to tear it up or we're just going to extend it, add that last year into a signing bonus somehow and add some more money. We're going to do that. We can do that. But I can't get someone that is going to give me the immediate impact that Jeffrey Simmons has given me and he will give me for the next 3 to 4 years. He will give me for the next 3 years, I think Jeff is so determined, and it showed this season, and we're showing it, and it showed in offseason. I think he's so determined to win, he's going to do whatever it takes from a physical standpoint to make that happen. And that may add more years to his career because of how he takes care of his body in season, but more importantly, out of the season. So when he gets in season, it's not as hard. With that in mind, I think he has three to four really, really good years. 5, 6, maybe 7, there'll be solid years. But it's cool to have a guy like Jeffrey Simmons playing solid football on your roster with the winning team. Because now he's the old head in the building. He's been through a lot of things. He's the guy with wisdom, so to speak, and he's a leader. So that's like having Calais Campbell. You know, he may not dominate like he once was, but he's a force in the middle still. But from a not just from a physical standpoint, but it's more so from a mental standpoint and a leadership standpoint. So this is the problem that they're in. They have nobody better than Jeffrey Simmons. And if you're not going to give me, you know, a first round plus something, and it has to be a top 100 pick, then hell, it may be even a top 75 pick. What am I giving you my guy Jeffrey Simmons for that I know is going to play for me? He's going to play really good football for the next, you know, 3 to 5 years. Why am I going to get out of the way?
Adam Schefter had a story last weekend looking at potential NFL trade candidates. Mm-hmm. He pulled some front office executives and coaches, and here were the Titans players who were mentioned. Tyler Lockett, mm-hmm. Chig Okonkwo, Kevin Zeitler, Arden Key, Draymond Jones, and Roger McCreary. You're not getting any top 100 picks for any of those
players.
No,
you're not.
You're not. And
I'm not trading Zeitler either. I'm just not. That makes no sense.
I hear what you're saying, mm-hmm. and I want to reiterate, I am not giving Jeffrey Simmons away. Mm-hmm. One texter says, no less than 2 first-rounders for Jeffrey Simmons. Any less, no deal. You would be looking at late picks and hoping they could be as impactful as Jeff is right now. Also, there will be another hole to fill. Wes says, trade Jeff. He is not winning us games. Y'all really think he would be here when the new stadium comes? We keep losing, and Jeff will be wanting out at the end of the year when we can't trade him. Skyler says, what the hell is Arden Key getting you? A 6th-round pick? LOL. Hopefully the Titans are putting out there that they don't want to trade Simmons to maybe jack the price up on the offers. Look, the Titans have, I want to say, 3 more games before the trade deadline. The trade deadline, if I'm not mistaken, is November 4th. The Titans are off that week. That is their bye week, which is interesting. The Titans have three more games before the trade deadline. Of course, they host Mike Vrabel and the Patriots on Sunday. We'll get more into Mike Vrabel a little bit at the end of the show, but mostly tomorrow. They are at Indianapolis, and they host the Chargers. If they go 0-3 in those games, and they are 1-8, I can't see a reason to keep Jeffrey Simmons.
But if you're not giving me the way Jeff is playing and the way he, I believe he will continue to play, you got to give me two top 60 picks. You have to, because if you're trading for Jeffrey Simmons, you're a playoff team, and I'm getting a bottom half of the first round. So that's not enough of Jeffrey Simmons. It's not. You got to give me two top 60 picks, which means you got to give me a first and a second. I don't want 2 seconds. I want a first out of this and a second out of this, because this guy is playing at an elite level, and it doesn't seem like it's about to end anytime soon, even next year. So if y'all want Jeffrey Simmons, they may be throwing that out there to sort of jack up the price a little bit, and that's, I think that's smart. But even if the price is that much, I still have to think about it. I'm going to make you sweat a little bit, okay? But I need two top 60 picks, and one of them need to be a first round.
615-737-1025. We will take your thoughts. ESPN says that the plan for right now is for the Titans to keep Jeffrey Simmons. Agree or disagree? 615-737-1025. We'll end the show, a shortened show today because of Predators pregame coming up at 5, with a question about Mike Vrabel. We will get more into Mike Vrabel tomorrow, but there is something I do want to ask that is related to Mike Vrabel, and we'll get to that next. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Preds pregame coming up at 5 o'clock. Predators at Canadiens, 6 p.m. puck drop. Right here on 102.5 The Game. You can also watch the game with Willie Donick and the crew on FanDuel Sports Network. Let's go to Scott on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Scott, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. How y'all?
Good.
Doing well.
I got a couple quick questions for y'all. So if Ridley doesn't play this weekend, other than Jefferson, Io Manor, and DK, who's our depth chart there?
Wow.
Van Jefferson, DK, Io Manor, Lockett.
Bryce Oliver. Well, Bryce Oliver's question. Yeah, Bryce Oliver.
It's not good, Scott. That's the answer.
Right.
It's not good.
It's not good.
Okay, so our offense, we basically need anything to get the spark right now, right? So, just hear me out. So, Wes Welker was a 4.63 guy. Danny Amendola was a 4.58 guy. You got a guy on the practice squad leading the weeks leading up to the combine or his pro day was running 4.58s or better, and he's a slot guy and he catches the ball. So, what would your thoughts about elevating him? I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you, Scott. Oh boy, now Scott, my throat is a little scratchy. I'm a little ill.
Have you caught the strep?
I hope I haven't caught the strep. I feel okay otherwise. Oh, man. Like,
Restrepo.
I think it's, Scott, I say this as respectfully as I can. I think it's going to take an act of God to get Xavier Restrepo activated for an NFL game with this franchise.
Yeah. I'm not sure. It's hard in this league when you get this sort of moniker attached to you. It's hard, and it's a bad one. It's hard to kind of get that off of you. And one of the hardest ones, like just talking about your physical attributes or none, you know, not having that, is if you run at a particular position, more specific, the wide receiver position, if you run above a 4.58, I think he was clocked at a 4.6 or 4.7.
It was up there.
Yeah, it was high. It's hard. It is hard to get, because what people see is that number. And they see the number of every other defensive back that has got to guard you, and they see every number of every other wide receiver that's in front of you. And a lot of times these GMs, for whatever reason, they can't get past that. I'm not saying it's right, but they can't get past it. Maybe he does get a shot because now it's McCoy. but you still got Borgonzi and Brinker who are calling the shots as far as that goes. So if they haven't brought him up now and they're down to basically five receivers, it's going to have to take somebody else going down potentially for him to be even called back up. Now, listen, they may choose to, McCoy may say, hey, listen, I just want to, you know, we're at a point, let's just put him on the active squad, let him play some special teams, see how it goes, and then we can sort of segue him into the wide receiver position, you know, on game day. If they could do that. I'm not saying that hasn't happened, but outside of that, I mean, he's unfortunately because of the forever 40 that he ran, and I think he's a good player. I do. I think he's a good player. But because of that, man, it's hard for GMs and coaches to look past that number. It especially if you're not 6'3", 6'2". He's, what, 5'9", 5'10", 5'11", somewhere around there. He's not a big receiver is what I'm saying. He plays big because of his toughness.
5'10", 202.
Yeah, he plays
is
big.
Is what he's listed at on ESPN.
Yeah, so guys like that, guys that are under 6 feet, they look for those guys to be speedsters or really damn quick. Guys above 6 feet, 6'2", 6'3", 6'4", they can get away with not running a, you know, 4'3", 4'4", 4'5", 40.
So my throat is a little scratchy, but I do not have the strap. I do not have the strap.
No, and it's unfortunate for Restrepo, man.
I'm sorry, Scott. I do not have the strap.
Listen, if this kid is meant to be in the NFL on a roster, active roster, he'll get there. He will. Best believe.
We will spend more time tomorrow talking about the return of Mike Vrabel. We planned on doing that earlier this week, but then the Titans decided to fire Brian Callahan. So we had to move it down.
They hijacked our whole show.
Yeah, but that's okay. We'll talk more about Mike Vrabel tomorrow. But there is one thing I want to ask you, Derek, about Mike Vrabel. Mm-hmm. Paul Kaharsky said on X/Twitter that the Titans will not have a tribute of some kind for Mike Vrabel on Sunday. Is that fair or foul?
Wow. I would tend to because he was a part of changing, you know, what this franchise looked like and what people thought about this franchise. Whether you loved him or you didn't, he was a part of that. He was a part of winning football. He had some losing seasons, I get it, the last 2 years, but he was a part of some really good teams. And he was a part of stability, leadership, and you saw it each and every day. I don't think that you don't commend that or you don't give a hand clap to that or you don't show acknowledgement to that. Now, I understand. If you don't give him, if there's not this sort of appreciation, what you told us was a lie. Because everybody think that the relationship between the upper management and Vrabel was good. He just didn't win. It wasn't nothing about his, you know, about his personality. You wasn't mad that he went to New England and said all that stuff. You fired him because he wasn't winning. If you don't give that man some type of acknowledgement and tribute, then what you're telling us is it was about your feelings and how you felt for him as a person. Because he helped, along with John Robinson, he helped Derrick Henry, he helped this franchise. So when Derrick came back, you give him a tribute, but you're not going to give the guy that was a part of that a tribute either? I would think that was wrong. I'm not bad-mouthing the franchise or anything, but a sign of appreciation means a lot. And I think Vrabel has done enough. He did enough in his time here that for a game, for a minute, he should be appreciated and allow the fans to appreciate him too. Because it's not like Brian Callahan is the head coach now. So it's not like you would be upstaging Brian Callahan.
Right. And it's not going to be like, you're not asking for what Derrick Henry did in
exactly.
His final game. Of course, he was still with the Titans, but when he took the microphone and addressed the crowd at Nissan Stadium in his final game in a Titans uniform. Just a quick acknowledgement. Yeah. I'm not, like, Predators fans, you remember several years ago when Shea Weber made his return with the Montreal Canadiens, speaking of the Montreal Canadiens, Predators and Canadiens coming up in roughly an hour. They gave him this long tribute that brought him to tears on the bench. I'm not asking the Titans to do that. Just show Vrabel on the sideline, say, "Welcome back, Coach Vrabel." And he'll probably not acknowledge the camera. Maybe he'll do a quick little, you know, hey.
Yeah, do a wave.
Yeah, but like just something like that. You don't have to do a tribute video that you're playing on the big screen at Nissan Stadium. But just, I think, acknowledge the fact that he was here for what? Six seasons. He took you to the playoffs three times. He won two division titles. You were the number one seed in the AFC. He won a Coach of the Year award. We're going to get more into Vrabel's legacy tomorrow.
He's the only since, and I'm trying to figure, did Fish win Coach of the Year? I'm not sure he did while he was here. He could have. I could be mistaken on that. I'm trying to think. It would have to have been one of those AFC, the Super Bowl year, the year after that, or when they went 10-0, started off 10-0 with that team. With Chris Johnson and all of
those. Mike Vrabel is the only Titans coach to win Coach of the Year.
So this man, out of the coaches that you've had at this organization, you've had some good ones. You've had some good ones, whether it was Houston, you know, the Bum Phillips and all that, or here with Fisher, and in between some good coaches. But he had all those coaches. He didn't take it to a Super Bowl, I get that. But he won Coach of the Year. You don't win Coach of the Year just because you're some slappy. You win it because you show leadership. Your team show improvement. Your team goes out every week and they battle and everybody notice it. We hate to play against a Mike Vrabel team. We hate to play. Man, that's why he got Coach of the Year. And if you don't acknowledge that, I'm not saying that the Titans aren't because we don't know. But if you're not acknowledging that, shame on the Titans, because I think even if you have some type of strife with him, this is about the fans. This is about what he did for your fan base and how his success allowed your fan base to beloved you, owner. His success allowed the fan base to beloved you. So why not? Again, I'm not saying that you're not. You may have something lined up for him and it may be great, but, and I hope it is. But if there's any, like, should we or should we not do it? It shouldn't be a should we or should we not do it. Oh, we're doing it. We may not, you know, give the all of the glam and glitz of it, but we will acknowledge that man for what he did with us, how he took my organization, my franchise, to help with the GM and the players. He took them from being a losing team to a winning team, one of the best teams in the national, the number one seed, which means you were what? The best team in the National Football League.
I'm not asking for a video tribute with tons of highlights of Mike Vrabel on the sideline or in the community. Just put him on the scoreboard for a minute. Just say, "Welcome back, Coach Vrabel." Let him wave to the crowd for a moment and be done with it. I think he at least deserves that. We'll get into more of Vrabel's legacy in Tennessee tomorrow because I do think it's a rather complicated legacy. I find it interesting how people view Vrabel in hindsight with the Tennessee Titans. We will dig into that more tomorrow. Chad Withrow from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow will join us in the 4 o'clock hour. Ask D-Mace in the 5 o'clock hour. Predators versus Canadiens coming up at 6 o'clock. Pre-game starts in roughly 5 minutes. A quick Predators note, they have reassigned Joakim Kemmel to the American Hockey League. So Joakim Kemmel, who made the opening night roster, heads back to the American Hockey League. Brady Martin not expected to play for the third consecutive game. So no Brady Martin in the lineup. Joakim Kemmel heading back to Milwaukee. But Chase McCabe will take it from here. He'll fill you in on all of the goings-on with the Predators as the pregame show is about to start. Once again, Predators versus Canadiens, puck drop at 6. Pregame in just a matter of moments right here on 102.5 The Game. We will be back tomorrow at 3 o'clock.
Be loved, loving your people. Have a safe, blessed, and wonderful day. I love you. The team love you. You hear that music. We will be back same time. Don't you forget about us. Peace.